This is Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle. The extraordinary life of Reverend John Howard Johnson, a great athlete at Columbia University, basketball player, a renowned clergyman, and the last president of the Negro National League, the vibrant history of Harlem, all told in Harlem's First Citizen by Dr. Lawrence D. Hogan. And joining us to talk about his book, Harlem's First Citizen, is indeed my guest today on Sports Jam, Dr. Lawrence Hogan. Great to see you as always, Larry.
Good to see you too, Doug. You hit the highlights there of John Howard Johnson in that introduction.
Larry is a professor of history emeritus from Union County College in New Jersey, where he taught African-American history for 37 years. He's also a great baseball historian and the author of several books about the Negro Leagues. His exhibit on the history of Black baseball has been on display at sites throughout the country. So we're thrilled to have you on the show, Larry, and congratulations on the book. As the last president of the Negro National League and the founding rector at St. Martin's Episcopal Church in Harlem, Reverend Johnson, who died in 1995, left an indelible mark on African-American baseball and, more importantly, the spiritual community of Harlem. This book uncovers a hidden chapter in history, shedding light on the remarkable legacy of Reverend Johnson and, as I mentioned, the vibrant tapestry of Harlem's rich heritage. Larry, you said without the Reverend's son David, this book would not have been possible. When did you know that you wanted to devote an entire book to the life of Reverend John Howard Johnson?
Almost immediately when I met David. I was researching at the time for one of the baseball books that I was writing. In fact, people, when they see me and say I have a new book, they hear me and say I have a new book, they say, oh, another book on baseball. And I say, no, but yes, in a little way. There's one chapter on baseball, the chapter that focuses in on his presidency of the Negro National League. I met David when I was, as I say, researching for one of the Black baseball books. And as I discovered who John Johnson was from David first, and then subsequently David being a major source for the continued writing of the book, I knew I had somebody special.
You really did. And his story is amazing. And not everybody knows the story. One of the reasons why you wrote the book. You make references in the book to one of Reverend Johnson's essays, A Place of Adventure. Can you talk about his vision of Harlem and how it countered some of the negative stereotypes that were out about his neighborhood?
I have a very good friend, an historian, Annette Atkins. We were in graduate school together. Annette read the book for me as a proofer, but more than a proofer, as somebody who was going to criticize it. And in doing that, she liked the book very much. She would say she didn't know that Harlem was like that at all. She was carrying all the stereotypes that are there across the years. I remember a student, I did walking tours of Harlem with my students every year, once a year. And I remember a student, when I invited them to come with me, saying, this was a Black young lady, my parents wouldn't let me go into Harlem. That was the picture that was there. And of course, John Johnson and St. Martin's, as other churches in the area and other aspects of Harlem, refute those stereotypes. Clearly, he does refute those stereotypes. So that was one of the features that I liked very much about the research I was doing and meeting David Johnson.
The book is filled with all kinds of information about Harlem, its past, present, and really, when you think about it, future. And Reverend Johnson's father, John Wesley Johnson, and his wife migrated from Virginia to New York City and eventually became a minister of what he would call St. Cyprian's. John Wesley Johnson died in 1930, but you want to talk about having an impact. His funeral was front page news on Harlem's leading newspaper, The New York Age. His accomplishments were amazing, especially during the Jim Crow era. So the father of the book that you're writing about may be just as famous as his son.
Well, it's very clear that the son inherited from his father the ministry, not of Saint Cyprian's, but well, he was an assistant at Saint Cyprian, and he carried what he did there at that church into his own ministry at Saint Martin's. You know, the coverage of John Wesley Johnson, not just in black papers, but in the New York Times, I think suggests the kind of man he was. The things that he did at the church, the programs that he brought to the church when he pastored it, I should say rectored it. He clearly had something that was there that would come down to the sun in strong sorts of ways. He even had boxing at his church, a whole host of sports, basketball very clearly, having been the black player on the Columbia team when there were no other black players playing with Columbia. It wasn't just sports that he brought to. He brought to social work out in the community. And of course, he brought a spirituality to the church as well. There was a deep spirituality in him and his son as well.
Before we get into all the sports stories regarding Reverend Johnson, there are several mentions of music that filled Harlem. I know you're a big jazz fan, and there's mention about the streets of Harlem, the churches, the Savoy Ballroom, and the Lindy Hop. For many people, this was a real exciting time to be a part of Harlem when it comes to the arts and music, right, Larry?
Oh, it was very much an exciting time. A time where music played a major role in Harlem. The coming of great musicians like Satchmo and quite a number of others. Music came into the church in a big way as well. There was a major drive in the church. This was the church that he was restoring at the time. He had inherited from a Episcopal congregation that had suffered a great fire in that church, Holy Trinity Church. Music that was a part of Harlem was also a part of the church itself. Outstanding choir leaders prizing themselves on the fact of choirs in the church. The securing of a wonderful organ in the church with a fund that was started. There was something of a match in some ways between the music in the interior of St. Martin's and the music that was so much a part of Harlem at that point in time. This is the Harlem Renaissance that we're talking about. And the musicians of that era were as much a part of the Renaissance as were the poets like Langston Hughes and County Cullen. It would have been a church that would have appealed to me very much in its services. I tell people sometimes that one of the reasons why I go to church every Sunday is to have a chance to sing without anybody telling me that I need to stop singing. You know, I look back on what I read about that church and I say, I wish I was there. They would have heard me singing, that's for sure.
That's a great point. And I think a lot of people feel the same way that you do. Everyone likes to sing in church because you're not judged, that's for sure. And when it comes to his impact, Reverend John Johnson, I want you to talk about how he seemed, you know, when you talk to his son, David, he seemed to embrace all kinds of different communities and people and would bring them into the church. Why do you feel he had that ability, Larry?
He was a man that was rich in his own person and very tolerant. No, not just tolerant, but very interested in a variety of ethnicities and different kinds of people in Harlem. He got that, I think, from his father, and he carried it as an important part of his own personality. Of course, the church was particularly a West Indian church. Variety of West Indian immigrants to Harlem at that time. And that was something that he recognized that church or that kind of church was needed. You know, when you come out of the West Indies into Harlem, you have Dutch people, you have French people, you have English people, You have Swedish people, and this is another area where people overlook the variety that was there and the richness of that was there. John Johnson had a very strong feeling for that kind of situation that he confronted. People don't know that the French in Harlem celebrated their French heritage with playing of the Marseillaise in special programs in their Harlem. And the Dutch, the people of Harlem, had their own queen, which they would celebrate, and again, a part of their tradition in Harlem. And John Johnson was just very open to that, appreciative of it, enjoyed it, became a part certainly of his ministry.
Reverend Johnson founded St. Martin's Episcopal Church on Lenox Avenue in 1928, which was declared a New York City landmark in 1966. And he built his congregation to well above 3,000 people by the late 1940s, just to give you an idea of the impact. And many, as Larry just mentioned, St. Martin's congregation was made up of West Indian immigrants. And he was a lifetime New Yorker, devoting his time to integration with people in his diverse community. And to give you some more background on him, in 1935, he was named a member of the Emergency Relief Bureau and was appointed as New York City's Police Department's first black chaplain by New York City Mayor at the time, Fiore LaGuardia, in 1939. So in 1947, he was appointed Commissioner of Baseball's Negro National League. A lot of what he did came right at the time when Jackie Robinson was breaking the racial barrier of Major League Baseball with the Brooklyn Dodgers.
Did you see Jackie Robinson hit that ball? It went zoom across the left field wall. Yeah, boy.
Yes, yes, Jackie hits that ball.
When he swung his bat, the crowd went wild because he knocked that ball a solid mile. Yeah, boy.
Yes, yes, Jackie hits that ball.
In 1945, in the midst of a push for integration of Major League Baseball, Mayor LaGuardia brought together a committee that was called to push in that direction, to push New York, to push the country in that direction. John Howard Johnson headed that committee. Mayor LaGuardia knew that they had worked together in a variety of places. Previously, and Mayor LaGuardia knew his man. John Howard Johnson was a great basketball player at Columbia, the first black to play on the Columbia varsity team. And he had been involved in the black baseball world through his ministry through the 1930s. Games that were staged to benefit the church, black baseball games. He had been a sports figure in New York. I recall one time in 1940, a basketball game was organized and played to raise funds for a children's fund that was part of his effort as well. And when you read the roster of names on that team, it's like, bringing together great black players on that team that brought funds into the church. So he was someone who had an involvement in sports in 1945. He had that involvement with Mayor LaGuardia, Fiore LaGuardia, and he was a natural figure for that position. It was a very tough position that he had to hold. It was a time when black baseball, the Negro Leagues, were under assault in some ways by what was happening. What needed to happen, though, outside of that baseball world or the baseball world that he was a part of, he headed this committee. And the committee brought forth a proposal. That if it had been implemented in the next 2 or 3 years, when Jackie came in, Jackie Robinson in 1946, if the advice of the committee had been taken, and he worked for this when he became commissioner, there would have been the preservation of the Negro Leagues at the same time that Major League Baseball was being integrated. That was his position. That became the position of the committee. There would be not, in fact, the destruction of Negro Leagues, but they would have served as a minor league in lots of ways for Major League Baseball. But that was simply not to be. The report that comes out is a report which one of the people on that committee, Larry McPhail, said the Yankees will never have a black player. That was obviously against the direction that John Howard Johnson wanted the baseball world to go. He got the position, incidentally, or interestingly, in large measure by the work of Effa Manley, the woman who was the owner, in effect, half owner or co-owner, I guess, of the Newark Eagles, and a very smart woman, a very intelligent woman. And she was a major figure in the operation of the league itself. Their connection went back to what John Howard Johnson is perhaps most famous for, the Don't Buy Where You Can't Work committee back in the 1930s, 34 and 35. Mrs. Manley and John Howard Johnson came together in that effort, and he learned then very much about the world of black baseball from his involvement with Mrs. Manley.
Yeah, and tribute to Larry, I'm wearing my Newark Eagles Don Newcomb jersey and a Newark Eagles hat. Larry has taught me so much about the Negro Leagues through the years. And one of the results was a wonderful sports jam that we had years ago as we connected Monty Irvin and Jimmy Heath together to talk about music and baseball. And that came about because of the relationship that I have with Dr. Hogan, Larry, our guest, Dr. Lawrence Hogan, who is the author of this book, Harlem's First Citizen, about Reverend John Johnson. That's what we're talking about today on Sports Jam. So one of the sports figures that came in contact with Reverend John Johnson was Sugar Ray Robinson.
The winner and the new middleweight champion of the world, Sugar Ray Robinson.
Sugar Ray would train at the boxing ring at St. Martin's. And in 1957, Sugar Ray Robinson fought Gene Fulmer in Chicago for the middleweight championship. After Sugar Ray knocked out Fulmer, David Johnson, who we've been talking about, the Reverend's son, remembers seeing Sugar Ray Robinson on television saying, "That's for you, Reverend Johnson. I did it for you."
Robinson, of course, so often referred to pound for pound, the best fighter in his era, in his time in the ring. And that moment is such a wonderful moment because it speaks back not only to John Johnson and the boxing opportunities that were there in St. Martin's, where Sugar Ray Robinson, just entering into the boxing world, trained to become the great fighter that he was. And obviously the connection is still there across the years. It's, 20 or so years, I suppose, when Robinson started to fight in the ring in St. Martin's and when he becomes the middleweight champion of the world. And that moment where Robinson points at the end of that fight against Gene Fulmer towards the screen, the television screen, the television cameras, and in effect says, John Howard, this is an Episcopal minister now, John Howard Johnson led me to be the fighter that I am. And that fighting goes back again on the heritage from John Howard Johnson's father at St. Cyprian's, which is a very strong black congregation, a very strong Episcopal congregation, trained along their road into boxing with several other excellent boxers. So it's not something that happens just accidentally. It's something that is the heritage that John Howard Johnson, is his heritage. So
Larry, on page 343 of The First Citizen, to me, it kind of capsulizes not only the title of your book, but the impact that Reverend John Johnson had on his community. And if you think about it, not just Harlem, way beyond that. So I'd like you to read just a short segment there on page 343 from your book.
One of my favorite reads, in spite of the fact that I've written it and go back into it, one of my favorite reads is found in this kind of section. The first citizen's designation applied to John Johnson is something that is, as we have seen in these pages, justified by a career of ministering in Harlem, which carries us across most of the 20th century. Travel with us once again along the John Johnson road when we look at his legacy. What we have seen when we look at his career as the child of migrants from America's impressive Southland who came to New York in the earliest stages of America's greatest and most consequential migration. John Johnson came to be, in his person and career, someone who defines the adjustments and identity building experienced by the generations in Harlem of Black migrants and immigrants and their children who would transform America's racial landscape.
That's Dr. Lawrence D. Hogan, reading from his book, Harlem's First Citizen, about Reverend John Howard Johnson. I know that you mentioned early on in the book that you would have loved to have the opportunity to speak with the Reverend, but you didn't get that opportunity. What would you have asked him after all this research?
Well, you know, when you write a book like this, or the first book that I wrote, a Black National News Service, the major figure being Claude Barnett. Both those men would have been wonderful to sit down with and have a conversation that would have gone on quite some time. You get to know the person so much that you identify with him, and you'd wish you'd had the opportunity to, ask of him the kinds of things that don't get answered. Gosh, John Howard Johnson, what would have I said to him? It's a whole variety of things across that long life. I would like to have asked him about the world that he lived in academically in at Columbia. He became, of course, took a master's degree at Columbia. And what did it mean to sit in a class with Franz Boas, one of the great figures in history, not just Black history, but one of the great figures in history, a man who was a major figure in fighting for integration? I really would have liked to have known what it felt like to be in his classroom. Gosh, numerous other things as well.
I'm sure you would have zillions of questions. You're a historian. You can put it all into various references, and I'm sure you would have an amazing interview with him if you had that opportunity. I do want to make clear how good John Johnson was when he was at Columbia University in the early 1920s. As you mentioned, he was the first Black American to play on the Lions varsity squad, and he was inducted in Columbia's Hall of Fame in 2014. He was one of the top forwards in the Eastern Intercollegiate League, and some of his best performances included 19 points and a 28-25 victory over Dartmouth in 1920. Think about that. The team scored 28 points, and he scored 19 of them in that game, just to give you some perspective of how good he was and why he is a member of Columbia's Athletic Hall of Fame. Larry, as we wrap up this sports jam, this was an opportunity for you to kind of take a different approach. You know, like you said in the beginning, a lot of people said, oh, another sports book. No, sports is just a part. How did it feel to be able to, to incorporate your loves of history, religion, community, sports, all into this book?
Well, when you get into the life of a person, I discovered that, as I said earlier, referencing to my first book, you would give, I say, your eye teeth to be able to sit down and have that kind of conversation. You more and more as you move into the story itself, it becomes something that's a part of you. in all kinds of significant ways, in feeling sorts of ways. The earlier questions you ask about what I would ask and what it felt like for me to be writing this kind of book. I had done so much on Black baseball across the years, and it was important and wonderful to meet the people who played the game. But here's John Johnson playing a different game in many ways. Oh, yes, the sports was there, but so many other things were there. I'm going to carry that with me for the rest of my life. Smiles come to my face when the subject of John Howard Johnson comes up. It was a wonderful experience for me.
Well, it's a wonderful experience to have you on Sports Jam. As I mentioned, you are a true lover of baseball. You're a true lover of life. You're an amazing historian, and it's an honor again to have you on the show. Continued success with the new book and with your career.
Well, Doug, it's an honor to be with you. I've been with you now several times. This is the first time that we've kind of veered off a little bit from the baseball story and into another story, which is as interesting in many ways on a personal level, more important than the Black baseball story that I tell. People would be surprised, I think, to hear that, because the Black baseball story was a wonderful story to tell, but so was this story. He's a figure who was unknown. He carries Harlem out to you in all sorts of ways, that stereotype that we talked about at the beginning of this interview. It's so wonderful to see them proved wrong, to see them proved stereotypical, not just in terms of the knowledge that you would get of that situation, but in terms of the feeling that you get. He's awakening a new kind of Harlem that anybody who studies the period, knows was there. But when I get it in diamonds, spades, clubs, and hearts from a figure who was a big part of it, that's so special.
Absolutely. Thanks again, Larry.
Thank you, Doug.
Sports Jam is a WBGO Studios production. You can hear all the past shows by going to wbgo.org/sportsjam or wbgo.org/studios. You can also find Sports Jam with Doug Doyle on the NPR list of podcasts or wherever you hear podcasts. Until our next Sports Jam session, I'll see you at the game.